This is a Las Vegas Sun podcast. You're listening to the Rebel Room. I'm Ray Brewer alongside Mike Grimala, where all year we talk all things UNLV athletics. And today we talk maybe a little bit of a surprise involving UNLV athletics. There's going to be a new sheriff in town in charge of the football program. UNLV, after three seasons, has fired head football coach Marcus Arroyo. Mike, he won seven games in 3 years, but five games this year, and everything appeared to be headed in the right direction. Your level of shock at this news?
I was surprised. I did think he was going to get another year at least. And they're still alive for a bowl game. They may still end up playing in a bowl. We're going to find out in the next few days here. I was surprised. I thought that obviously they struggled mightily. They had a 6-game losing streak that sort of torpedoed their season. That loss at Hawaii was really, really bad. That's one of the worst in recent program history. They did manage to win the rivalry game for the Fremont Cannon. I thought that was going to be enough to get him one more year, but Eric Harper felt otherwise. He decided to make a move. One of the interesting things that he said during his press conference after the firing, Eric Harper, the UNLV athletic director, he mentioned 6-game losing streak, and then we struggled against UNR. So they, in his mind, yeah, they beat Reno, but they didn't beat him by enough. And that's kind of where Eric Harper was coming from. Like they were a 12-point favorite. Game should not have come down to the final play. To answer your question, I was surprised. What did you think? Did you think he was safe?
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because at the bus stop dropping Gabby off, I was talking to one of the other dads and we basically came to the conclusion that he'd done enough, right? He won five games, which is pretty rare for UNLV. They look really good early and jumping off to that 4-1 start. And year four would kind of be the year, bowl game or bust. But the one thing I do appreciate about the move is that you look at any other program in the country, and if you don't go to a bowl game in 3 years, you're fired, right? There's a certain standard. Where, you know, you saw it like at Auburn, for example, obviously SEC, bigger investment, totally different scenario, but nobody's getting 4 years to redo things. You're looking for quick flips. That's why the transfer portal is so important. There's 1,000 kids in there. It's basically killing high school recruiting as we know it. And I think, with that said, maybe that helps explain why he doesn't get the fourth year. Like, you had 3 years to fix it, and it is what it is. I mean, another theory is that they think long-term he might not be the answer, but maybe the program's good enough next year to get to a bowl game, and then you got to say, do we extend the guy? And maybe they don't want to have to deal with him for another 3 years. And here we are today.
Yeah, he would have had 2 years left on his contract after this season. And that's usually when you extend a coach, you know, so they were coming up on decision time, and he had just not done enough in Eric Harper's mind to warrant that extension. We saw it's pretty similar to what we saw with Marvin Menzies in basketball a while ago. He got 3 years. He had the same sort of where Marcus Arroyo came in during the COVID year and had zero wins. Marvin Menzies was hired really late, couldn't recruit anyone, also had the worst season in program history. And they both had incremental improvements up to year three and had it positioned where you thought there was going to be a jump in year four. And both of them got fired before they got that chance. And both the times it was an AD who did not hire them. In Menzies' case, it was Desiree Reed-Francois who said, "We just don't think that he's up to the standard. We don't think it's good enough. We don't think he's the guy long-term," is basically what she said. And I think if you read between the lines, that's what Eric Harper is saying too. He just doesn't think that Marcus Arroyo was the guy long-term. They weren't going to extend him. So I don't think 70 like that. I don't think they wanted to stick with him and then risk winning 6 or 7 games next year. And then you got to sort of, you're kind of stuck with him, for lack of a better term, which is crazy to say, because UNLV football would love to be, you know, stuck winning 6 or 7 games most of the time. But I just don't think Eric Harper felt like Arroyo was the guy. And if you don't think he's the guy, then this was the offseason to get rid of him. And they didn't waste any time. So that's what they do.
And I do. And it's crazy to think that, and this is just our theory, it's not the theory, so let's just be crystal clear, but UNLV, of course, has a history of being a 2 or 3 win program. And I've always said that you could have given Bobby 5 years or Tony 5 years because UNLV was building towards something. But guess what? They're there now. They've built it. And the expectations at UNLV are unlike any other time in the program because of the facility and the stadium. And UNLV wants to be a premier school in the conference, so maybe they could get to another conference, and it just didn't get done. I think that when you look at why, or you say Bobby got 6 and Tony got 5 or whatever, consider that Marcus had the state was recruiting towards the stadium the whole time and was recruiting towards
a complex on
the
campus
the whole time, and he had more available to him than any other coach in program history, and he lost 6 in a row after not winning 0. And then, of course, we bring up some of the other things that, you know, the guy's recruiting philosophy didn't necessarily center around Las Vegas, right? Well, Marvin Menzies also had a hard time going out and talking to the community, and that matters. You saw the new Arizona football coach, Arizona State football coach, guy got hired on Saturday, had a presser on Sunday. 4 hours later, he's having a big Zoom call for all the Phoenix area high school coaches. And I think there's enough players here locally where you could build a good program. Now, is that a reason to fire a guy? Absolutely not. But when you factor in other things, could it tilt it that way? Sure thing. But I think you do bring up another great point, is that Eric Harper, this wasn't his guy. And if Harp is going to get judged on a football program, which, let's be honest, is the face of any university, he wants to have his own guy.
The first thing you said was, I thought it plays into that, where you said, like, this program is at a different time and the coaches are under a different standard than in past years. Something that Eric Harper did not say during his press conference was the word rebuilding or rebuild or rebuilding process. Like, he doesn't think that this is something that should take 3 years to get you to a bowl game. I think he wants to hire a coach to get them to a bowl game next year. I think that's kind of the standard that he wants to set, is that, like, you come in, you play for a bowl game, you contend in the Mountain West, and he doesn't necessarily think that it's a 5-year process. So he wasn't talking about rebuilding. I don't think he wants to hear that from candidates. So there is a different standard. As for the local stuff where you were mentioning with, you know, local recruiting and all that. Yeah, not a deal breaker for a coach, but definitely some, it doesn't hurt to have the local community on your side, which Marcus Arroyo did not have them on his side. And at times it appeared he actively pushed them away from his side, and he didn't want to put in the time or put any energy in towards that. So that was a conscious decision Marcus Arroyo made. I don't think it was a deal breaker, but it certainly turned some people off.
Yeah. And now we look, okay, so whoever the new coach is going to walk into a situation where they think they're on the cusp of a bowl, right? The league is as bad as it's ever been. And there's one thing to, you know, go 2 and whatever when you're playing TCU and Utah and BYU. There's another thing to not make a bowl when you're playing a Hawaii team that was historically bad, or, you know, some of the other teams in the league that you should be beating. But does the new coach come in and you got to worry about roster construction, you know, with the portal, how many kids are going to jump in the portal and leave?
That's going to be one of the immediate priorities that you've got to sort of look at, is the portal and who's out and who's in. It gives you a chance to build really quickly and add to your program really quickly. They've got some guys that, I guess without going through and asking each player, you know, are you going to, you know, what their future plans are, you can just sort of look up and down the roster at the key players who have not transferred before, like the homegrown players who have never transferred are guys who can take advantage of that one-time transfer rule and be eligible immediately next year if they were to leave. So that's guys like Doug Brumfield, Kyle Williams, Noel Williams. Those guys can leave right away and play somewhere else. So those guys I would put in the, like, if you're a coach, you've got to keep them.
But if Doug Brumfield does put his name in the portal, does he get picked up?
He's probably done enough that another program would be very interested in him. He's a starting level quarterback. He's just not healthy. Hardly ever. He can't really play more than 3-4 games in a row without getting injured. So that's a concern, but I don't think the talent wise someone would be interested. The other guys that they have that they're sort of are productive for them. Aiden Robbins, the running back, he already transferred in from Louisville. So he would, if he was to transfer again, he'd have to sit out a year. Ricky White from Michigan State, he was a good receiver this year. If he leaves, he'd have to sit out. So Harrison Bailey, the guy who stepped in at quarterback against Reno and won that game. If those guys were to transfer, they'd have to sit out a year. So they're probably more likely to stay. So you've got a mix of, when you're talking about the cornerstone guys that were, you know, your big players this year, some of them can leave right away. Some of them can't. New coach is going to have to figure that out and decide who he wants to keep, how to prioritize that, who to re-recruit. That's probably going to be one of the first things he's got to work on.
Yeah. And I saw somewhere on Twitter, there's like 900 players in the portal. You know, who even cares about recruiting high school kids anymore?
It's a lot of guys at a lot of positions. If you need an offensive lineman, there are plenty of offensive linemen you can get. Same with any other position. So it's always going to be more attractive than – see, here's the thing. When Marcus Arroyo wasn't recruiting Las Vegas, I kind of understood it from the standpoint where he was on the hot seat. And if you're on the hot seat, you're going to value a fifth year senior from Coastal Carolina that you can recruit more than you're going to value a 260-pound guard from Centennial or something like that, who's not going to play for you for 3 years. Some guy who's on a track. I understood it a little, but
there's a lot of intrigue from a 17-year-old kid that you're recruiting, who you project will turn into something, but you don't know if it's going to happen. You don't know if that person's passion for the sport will continue. You don't know if they're going to build into that frame. You don't know if they're going to be a good citizen or student versus, hey, I got this kid who's in the portal. He's got 2 years left, the COVID year, and he's already graduated. It's like getting a JC transfer that's 22 years old, that's fully developed, that you could plug and play for 2 years. And, you know, it's a dream. And guess what? You never need to recruit another high school kid because you could just do this every year.
And if you look at
kids with 2 years left every year in this thing,
if you look at UNLV's recruiting class for 2023, they've got three guys committed for the early period. So, yeah, I mean, Arroyo was fully on board with transfer portal making up, you know, the vast, vast majority of their incoming recruits. And I would expect the new coach, whoever they hire, to pretty much follow that script.
Yeah, and I lowballed the amount of kids in the portal. As of 11:50 today, Tuesday, there's 1,973 kids in the portal, 261 FBS, 631 FCS, and here's where it gets fun, 780 D2, 301 D3.
Okay, so let's say that's 630 kids from FCS. It's a lot.
I mean, again, now will this be able to keep up? Because eventually that COVID year is going to expire, right?
Yeah, and we'll stop seeing the super seniors and the kids who have the extra year of COVID eligibility. Mm-hmm. That by the wayside at some point. And we'll be back to a normal four-year/5-year graduation track.
Yeah, but it's just like, I know two kids that are in the portal. One kid that left the Mountain West school, and I don't think the kid's going to get a scholarship anywhere. And it's a shame because as someone who paid tuition, as I'm sure you paid tuition, right, Michael?
Big time.
Yeah.
Straight out of my pocket.
You know, to give up free room and board and free tuition for the opportunity to try to get a good experience, you know, it's tough on the thing I feel bad for is, you know, there used to be hundreds of kids committed throughout town. And now you're hardly seeing any of it. Yeah, the top end kid is still going to USC, but, you know, the kid that was going to get recruited by Utah State, New Mexico, and UNLV, that kid's sitting there looking at like Victor Valley Junior College and College of the Sequoias.
It's an entirely different landscape. It is. What would you like to see? I know Eric Harper laid out some of the things he wants to see in the next coach. What would you like to see if I asked you to like paint me a picture of the type of guy, if not throw out some actual names, but what's the type of coach you would like to see come in here? You want like a 60-year-old, like crusty veteran who's like been there and done that, one Mountain West championships, or you want a hot young guy? What do you want?
Yeah, so I think they've gone the hot young guy, you know, the last four hires with Samford, Hauk, Sanchez, and Marcus, and that necessarily hasn't been great. So I'm hoping they attract a guy who's, you know, been a head coach before, knows how to win, is in his late 50s, but he brings along that up and comer who's kind of the coach in waiting, and we say, okay, if this package works out, Mike, you're going to be the coach for 5 or 6 years, and then we're going to flip it over to Ray. And we're going to kind of build like the hierarchy. Like I know, for example, like DeMarco Murray, the running back coach at Oklahoma, former NFL running back, played at Bishop Gorman, loves Vegas, wants to be back in Vegas, is really good friends with the Fertittas. Okay. Guy doesn't meet Harper standards to be a head coach. Probably isn't ready to be a head coach, but is a darn good recruiter, right? So could we pair him with somebody? Like you look at New Mexico State, right? Jerry Kill's there. Guy was at Minnesota,
yep.
Well-respected. They know who the next head coach is going to be after Jerry, right?
Yes.
Could we get a situation like that where guy's going to come in, he's going to out-coach all these other coaches in the league, get UNLV to that 5-7 per year window, and let's ride that out for a decade and then think about going from 5-7 to like 8-10. I think it's got to be a 15-year process. I hate to say that, but I mean, look where we're at now. It's been 15 years since Bobby basically got the job, right?
Yeah, it's been a while. I think that's an interesting point that you brought up. I haven't heard anyone else bring that up in the past couple of days since the firing, but the fact that you want to see someone, not just an experienced coach, but also packaged with a coach in waiting, is an interesting point that I hadn't considered. But
yeah, because somewhere you got to build some continuity, you know, right?
Yeah, and it's the type of job. UNLV has always been the type of job you always hear people say, like, well, if you're successful here, it's going to be a short stint. I mean, I think that's kind of what Marcus Arroyo was planning, just a quick flip, and then he's gone for the next job. Didn't work out that way. But, yeah, if whether it's due to a coach, you know, who's getting up there in age and may not want to be a head coach for 10 years or someone having so much success that they're moving on to another job, it would be nice to have someone in waiting to take over. Seems kind of like more like a luxury factor in the when Harper comes to make his decision, but it is probably something to consider.
Yeah, and again, it's really interesting. The thing, like, when any coach gets fired, that I found that's really tough to is that the players have a lot of the players have come out and had Aurora's back.
Yes,
which I don't remember like that happening with like Bobby or Tony as much. Guys who got a full 5 years, I guess, is the big difference. And, you know, it's if I am the next guy, am I worried? Because what happens if I don't get it done in 3 years?
But like you said, UNLV giving every coach 5 years was the outlier. Pretty much every other program is like, it's pretty much like you said earlier in the podcast, 3 years to make a bowl game. And if you don't, that's pretty much it. That's what you're going to get. So I think if UNLV is now at that 3 year standard, it's not much different than every other program. UNLV used to have to guarantee five, you know, unofficially guarantee five in order to attract coaches because the program was so bad and it didn't have much to offer. But now, you know, the program is not terrible. Like, I've been saying this for a couple of years, like the win-loss record is not there, but this is not a terrible program. It should not be a doormat. They should not have problems attracting a coach. You know, they pay a good amount of money. They got the facilities and everything. So 3 years is pretty much the standard. I don't think that's going to be.
Michael, you've been listening to me forever. Great city, phenomenal university, great facilities, top-notch stadium, the Las Vegas Strip to employ these kids when they're done. It's a home run, right? Do you want to go to college in Fresno or San Jose or Laramie? Like, who in the hell wants to spend 5 years in Laramie, Michael? It's cold as hell there.
My point is minus 20.
Who wants to practice in minus 20? Yo, Las Vegas, it's every day is beautiful. You graduate, MGM, and you work at MGM for 30 years. It's like, and nobody wants, and you can't recruit anybody here. I mean, come get the hell out of here. I mean, they should be Boise State.
I'm talking only from a coaching perspective. It used to be a program where you had to give coaches 5 years. Now I don't think they have to do that. It's pretty much a regular program now. They've elevated to the point where if you can't win in 3 years, you can't win. And then that's pretty much it. So
the Pac-12 should be begging UNLV to join the conference.
Maybe. You think this is going to be a fast search? You think we're going to be doing a podcast 2 weeks from now wondering like what's taking so long? Or do you think like they're already going to have someone hired by the time we get around to posting this online? Well,
let me tell you this. Signing day is going to come and go here pretty soon with UNLV. I really think, and you'll color me crazy and people will disagree with me because Aurora had highly ranked classes. But when he came in and he said, hey, listen, I'm going to be the head coach, but first I'm going to go coach Justin Herbert in the Rose Bowl. And they missed that first early recruiting class. I think that set them back. I really do.
That's an interesting point.
Not as much as COVID, maybe, arguably, but everybody had to deal with COVID. You know, it's just the fact that he said, okay, I'm going to take the job, put it in my back pocket for a few days, and I'm not going to go recruit anybody. And then I'm going to come in and I'm going to get whoever I could get, and I'm going to fill it out however. And, you know, and then I'm going to take all the players because they're not my guys and I'm not going to play them.
It was a pretty disastrous first season for a number of reasons, you know, COVID stuff. But I personally got sick of hearing about COVID as an excuse. I can only imagine how annoyed Eric Harper had to be anytime someone brought up COVID for as an excuse for why they got beat by 30 points every week in 2020 and went 0-6. It was not a pandemic that was localized to Las Vegas or the UNLV campus. Literally everyone had to deal with it. Yeah. It affected every program equally. So I bristled anytime anyone ever even brought it up. It's like, yes, you're a first time head coach. Yes, you're dealing with COVID. Every other program is dealing with it. And I think you saw Eric Harper sort of pull back the curtain a little bit in, I think it was his first answer during that press conference when he said, well, COVID year 2020, that year counted and we weren't very good. And that, I think that said a lot. And now you're saying I completely forgot that Arroyo took the job and then didn't come here for a while he finished up with Oregon. So yeah, that may have been the first decision he made that kind of came back to haunt him.
Yeah. Well, let me also tell you this. When Marcus came in, he came in inheriting a 5-win team like today that only needed a little polish, that had a lot of returning pieces, including a very good offensive line.
And Charles Williams and Armani Rogers, who ended up transferring.
Yeah, who was on the cusp of getting to a bowl. But Tony wore out, you know, Desiree, and even though he got the complex built, he didn't go to a bowl game in 5 years, and they got rid of him. Completely justifiable, right? Marcus came in, he looked at the groceries in the pantry. He didn't like Oblad at quarterback. He didn't like some of the receivers. He got rid of them all. Literally got rid of them all, right? Was proud of it during Mountain West Media Day. You and me, we talked to him. Yeah, I've only got 6 guys left from the Sanchez era. Had to come in, teach those guys how to put their shoes on. That's how bad they were. Literally, right? He's boasting about how get them to run my system, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, yada, yada, yada. Now, if they bring in a new guy, is the new guy going to be like, listen, the groceries here are rotten. I got to bring my own guys in. And now are we back to the whole 5-year plan? Or is this person going to come in and take what's on the grill and flip it and get them to that Albuquerque bowl that we're striving to get to, baby?
I'm pretty confident, like I was talking about earlier, there's no rebuilding job to be done here. I don't think Eric Harper is going to hire someone to do a rebuilding job. I think they're going to hire someone to come in, try to keep as many players as they can of the good players that they like. They'll try to keep as many as they can and add to that through the transfer portal. And this coach is going to try to win 6 games in 2023. And that's going to be the benchmark. I don't think we're going to see someone come in, as you said, like Marcus Royer did at that first media day and say, the roster is completely gone. I'm installing an entirely new system. Yes, the new coach is going to have he's going to have his own defensive system and offensive system. But I think you'll see more acquiescence to things that had worked previously. Guys that were good under Marcus Arroyo will still be given a shot to fit into this new system. They'll try to work with them. I'm saying all this without having any idea who that coach is going to be, but I think that is sort of a prerequisite for whoever they will end up hiring. I think Harper wants that. I think he's going to hire someone who's willing to work with the current players while bridging forward to the players that are yet to be recruited. So I don't think you have to worry about a complete tear down. It's not going to be that. It's going to be taking what they did this year and trying to add at least one more win to that total immediately.
Yeah. And they were so close. I mean, they left, you know, the Hawaii game and the San Diego State game for me could have been the clinchers. I mean, they just, again, it goes back. If you remember the last time we did this podcast, bro, not to sing my graces, but I was telling you that Hawaii game makes me nervous because
you did. You called it. I got to give you credit. I said that they were unlosable, that there's no way UNLV could lose those games as double-digit favorites. You said Hawaii made you nervous for all the reasons that Marcus Arroyo ended up blaming the loss on. You said, you know, it's a tough trip. It's weird, the time. What do you go out the day before? What do you do? And, like, all that stuff. And then he said after the game, like, we were distracted. Team wasn't right. So I got to give you credit. You kind of nailed that one.
Yeah. Well, it's, unfortunately, it's
And I do think that's the one single game that pretty much ended his tenure. Because if they win that and then they beat Reno, they're 6-6 and they're in a bowl game automatically, and Harper can't fire him. So just losing that Hawaii game opened the door for him to be fired, and just their lackluster performance that week and another lackluster performance against Reno, even though they won, kind of slammed the door on him.
Do you think that maybe they go in Harper and Marcus for the end of the year meeting, which is commonplace for all athletic officials and coaches? And Marcus is like, hey, got us to 5. We're knocking the door down. I need to get 2 more years.
Yeah, I'm sure he argued for it. I'm sure he believes that they're moving in the right direction. He said that a number of times.
But you think he maybe asked for 2 years and then Harper's like, no, you're going to have to win next year before you get another year. And then
So you think that maybe he was trying to negotiate a bit of an extent? No, I think it was pretty much Harper made up his mind and it was, hey, come to this meeting. Arroyo walks in and Harper says, we got to let you go. I don't think there was a dialogue of like Arroyo saying like, well, I don't need a full extension, but if you give me 2 more years, I think it was Harper pretty much made up his mind after the Hawaii game, maybe during the Hawaii game, where he said like, this coach is just not for us. He's not going to get the job done here. I've got to bring in my own guy. I'll bring in someone better.
I got to give him credit that Eric Harper is in charge of the athletic department. He made a very important decision. He stuck to his guts and he got it done. And to me, that's, I have no problem with that, you know, which is weird because I had a problem with when they got rid of Marvin Menzies.
Yeah. It's, if you're going to hire an athletic director to be in that position, then you kind of have to roll with their decisions. Harper said that he huddled with Keith Whitfield, sort of an open dialogue always with the coaching stuff. But he said when it came down to it, it was his decision 100%. And like I said, his reasoning was just that he didn't think Marcus Arroyo's full body of work was moving the program in the right direction. So it's hard to really argue with that when the AD says, you know, we just didn't think he was the guy. There's really no, you just have to, that's what he's hired to do. And he didn't think this is what he wanted to do. So we'll see. Now the question is, can he bring in someone better? We've seen some names get thrown around on social media and stuff. I don't really know behind the scenes if there's I assume Harper has a wish list of guys he wants to talk to and guys he's super interested in. It's probably a short list. We'll see how long it takes for that to sort of congeal and for something actionable to happen.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Mike, we've been talking for a while. Real fast. I was at the basketball game.
I was gonna say before you get, like, what's your impression of this 7-0 juggernaut? You saw them at their height against this Life Pacific team.
Well, again, tough to make any concrete opinions, if you will, after a game against the NAIA school, but I have in person been to one game and watched others on TV. And the thing that really stands out is they play hard. I really appreciate that. And it seems like they like each other, which of course, when you're 7-0, it's easy to like each other, but he's really cut back the minutes on Webster and the point guard, number five,
McCabe.
And those guys seem like they're still interested and they're working to get back into a rhythm, which I do appreciate.
Yeah. So you say they like each other. I would say the more, I do think they like each other, but I think the more impressive feat from Coach Kevin Kruger is these players, they like playing this style. They enjoy playing this style of basketball, which is defense first, expend all your energy on defense for 40 minutes, and then sort of use the leftovers to play on offense, which is incredibly difficult to get, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids to buy into that we're going to win on defense. Not only does Kruger have them doing that, he's got them like enjoying it and thriving off of it, drawing energy from getting stops, which is just a very huge accomplishment in my mind. And they have them there already at this point in the season. Like, I thought they would build it, and maybe by the end of the year, they'd be clicking at that end and we'd see them at full force, but they're kind of already there. Like, they embraced it. They're all about this style. They want to get stops. And I think that's been the biggest factor in them getting out to a 7-0 start.
Yeah. And so just talking out loud, Mike, few other quick observations. Do you remember the signature moment of the Wichita State game last year at T-Mobile?
I think it was the deciding play was Keyshawn Gilbert fouling on the final possession that, and then they lost on the free throws. What did you think?
I mean, the highlight reel play was the behind the back thing that McCabe
had. Oh, okay. Yeah. The password through the defenders behind the back. Yeah. That was the highlight.
I tell you what, man, every time that guy's in the game, he needs to try a behind the back pass. Could you just throw it straight, please? There's no need to do. This isn't the Harlem Globetrotters. It's just, I feel like the guy is trying to replicate that play to build his brand.
And it must have been up by 15. He did it against High Point behind the back.
Yeah, drew the ball out of bounds. And
I mean, Life Pacific.
Yeah.
They must have been up by 50 points when he tried that.
Yeah. And then, so the big guy that went off for like 20 and 13. Against Life Pacific, what's his deal? He's not going to out of shape, right?
Carl Jones, he can't really keep up with Division One pace of play. He is in much better shape now than he was last year at his junior college, but just in terms of like quickness and stuff like that, you can see changing end to end, just moving, covering ground. He's not really quick enough, I don't think, to play.
Is he on scholarship?
Yeah.
Okay, he's an awful interview, by the way.
He's like the 12th or 13th man. So I don't think you really have to worry about him too much unless they are just decimated by injuries.
Okay, well, either way, that's my observation. I think Keyshawn Gilbert, I remember when Keyshawn Gilbert committed, people in town were like, why would TJ, this is when Otzelberger was the coach, Mike,
yep,
take Keyshawn, because they were hot and heavy after Zion, and Zion was really close because Zion won't want to play with Keyshawn.
Yeah, and Keyshawn committed first, and you're right. A lot of people said, oh, why would you take another point guard? You're going to scare off Zion Collins. What if he doesn't want competition? What if he doesn't want another point guard in his class? I do remember that.
And Gilbert came in as like the third point guard who the expectations weren't that high for him, and maybe he would transfer out like his brother did. And the kid plays great defense, and guess what? He's their best player, and it's not even close, in my opinion. And, you know, the one thing I do wish is that, you know, his style of play leads to fouls. And when he goes on the bench, like we saw against High Point, right? They just can't, they're not, if that guy goes out, they're done. It's that simple.
It's Keyshawn Gilbert is the best player. He looked like it over the summer. He made that leap. He's really good. I think that as the season goes on, and it's really the first time that Keyshawn has played starters minutes, and he's really been counted on to be out there. I think over the course of the year, with some coaching, you would hope that he would come to understand how important he is to the team, and maybe shave off a foul here or there. Like, yes, you can get a foul if you can really, you know, push the envelope on this play and maybe draw a foul, or you can sort of back off and live to fight another day, and you can play five more minutes tonight because you don't pick up that foul in the first half. And I think that's something he has to learn because he hasn't been a star before.
Yeah, but also him having to pick and choose where to have that bulldog mentality is – you hate that because that could alter the way he plays, because when he's out there, he's just so darn good.
Yes.
But the drop-off from him to McCabe – it's just brutal. It's severe.
I think that you've got to trust Keyshawn Gilbert. He's still learning how to be counted on. Like last year, he only played, you know, probably 10 minutes a game. And it was basically, hey, go in for 10 minutes, pour out your entire body of energy into defending the ball. Just fly after every loose ball. Be a complete whirlwind out there. We only need you for 10 minutes. Foul as much as you want. And then to go from that to like, hey, we need you to play 32 minutes tonight. So kind of pace yourself, but still keep up that defensive intensity. He can do it. It's probably just going to be a bit of a learning curve. Is he going to be in foul trouble here and there, you know, maybe throughout the year? Maybe. It hasn't really cost them yet. It's something that, if that's like one of the major problems facing them, I think that's something they can probably figure out. I mean, right now he's shooting 63% from 3-point range. That's probably going to get cut in half at least by the end of the year. So I think that's probably, that regression is probably more of an issue than his fouls at this point.
Okay. And then, so lastly, Jackie Johnson.
Yes.
Who I think people worried about his size and the frequency of how he shoots the ball, and I'm going to tell you, I love that kid.
I was wondering
him shooting it from midcourt. That doesn't bother me, and I actually think that they're going to get him to develop. And we got to realize that the jump that they had from year one to two with Keyshawn, you might see with Jackie. I don't know if that's a hot take, but that's my take, and I'm sticking to it.
No, Jackie Johnson is an interesting player. He is so quick, and he's great at getting past his man and driving to the rim. He's not so great so far at converting those layups. I'm looking at it right now. His field goal percentage at the rim, 50%, which is not good. But that's something he may – those shots that may have worked at a lower level for him are a little more contested in the Mountain West. So he may learn how to drop in a few of those by the time the season gets going here. But yeah, he's fun to watch. He's probably their best shooter. And he does give them sort of an offensive, just a dynamic element to the offense when they really lack that. There are times when they really struggle to get something going, and he's a guy who can get something going.
Yeah.
Are they going to make the tournament?
I still think it's too early to tell, but I tell you, the most important game on the schedule, and it's not even close for me, is
New Year's Eve.
Yeah, you got to win that.
New Year's Eve at the Thomas and Mack Center, San Diego State. It's probably going to be ranked fairly high in the rankings. Heck, UNLV may be ranked by then. They're getting votes right now in the top 25 ballot. I don't know if you saw that.
Michael, it was in my story on Sunday. It's in my story. Come on.
Yeah. So it could be two ranked teams by then.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, for Mike, I'm Ray, and this is another edition of The Rebel Room.